In recent months, botched executions and a shortage of lethal injection drugs have called into question the future of the death penalty here in America. I'm Regina Vaidyanathan, and for the BBC World Service, I've come to the southern state of Tennessee, which recently passed a bill to bring back the electric chair. America is one of the few Western nations to still carry out executions, but do recent events mean we'll soon be at the end of death row?
So they opened up the blinds, and there he sat in the chair with his water dripping down his face. And I had this vision of the electric chair crying for its victim. It was just so bizarre. So then he started to hyperventilate some more, and then they put this mask over him. It was like a welder's mask, so you could hardly see any of his face now, hardly any skin. And they had a shroud over his head. And then this fan came on, and it was really loud. And then it couldn't have been more than 5 seconds later, you heard this tremendous bang, and that was the electrocution. The lights didn't dim or anything. It was just a tremendous bang.
In the wood-paneled marble chamber of the Tennessee Supreme Court, lawyer David Rabin's describing the early hours of the 12th of September 2007, when he was inside a very different state institution on the other side of this city, Nashville, as a witness for convicted child killer Darryl Holton, the last man electrocuted in Tennessee. This is the heart of the American South. Nashville's the home of country music and the buckle of the Bible Belt.
I actually drafted Tennessee's death penalty statute when I was a prosecutor 35, 40 years ago. And I'm not adverse to the death penalty per se. I think in extreme situations, perhaps it's appropriate. But I think if you're going to have a death penalty, I think that the means of execution are just as important as the decision to have a death penalty. Death penalty has an enormous symbolism. We are standing in the Supreme Court of Tennessee right now. One of the justices of this court lost her office because of a vote she cast in a death penalty case. Three of the judges are up for a re-election here in a few months, and there's been great discussion about whether they should retain their seats because of their supposed positions on the death penalty.
This moment hasn't come out of nowhere, though, and the strange thing about the debate playing out here in Tennessee, in the state legislature, perhaps soon here in this very courtroom and in others across the United States, is that the catalyst, the shortage of lethal drugs, came from another country thousands of miles away.
I'm Maya Farrow, I'm the director of the death penalty team at Reprieve in London. In 2010, we got a call alerting us to the fact that British drugs were due to be used in an execution in Arizona. We started investigating this and established that they had come from the back of a driving school in Acton, West London. We launched a judicial review of the government's decision not to put export controls in place to prevent such drugs being sold for use in lethal injections in states like Tennessee, where there was an execution slated later that year. The government decided to put the export controls in place given there was no medicinal usage of these drugs in the US at the time. We went to Europe and they put a similar export control in place because they didn't want to see European drugs being used against their purpose to execute prisoners. So I then also went to speak with the manufacturers and discovered that none of them wanted their drugs used in executions. In fact, they didn't even know that this was a possibility. And when they found out, they took all steps necessary to protect the integrity of their medicines. And that means US, European manufacturers, Indian manufacturers, putting distribution controls in place in the US to prevent sales to prisons for use in lethal injection executions, which is the reverse of the intended use of these medicines, which is, of course, to save and improve lives. We've also found that the manufacturers of even the active ingredients used in compounded drugs don't want their medicines used to kill US prisoners. The result of these efforts is that there are shortages across the US of execution drugs.
I don't know when I'm stuck in holes in prison, and time keeps dragging on.
So to protect what sources are left, many states, including here in Tennessee, have cast a veil of secrecy over the process. And there's the risk of botched executions, like the recent, highly publicised case of Clayton Lockett in Oklahoma. Critics of the death penalty say these examples, and the uncertainty around which drugs are being used and how they might work, is unconstitutional, running afoul of the Eighth Amendment, which prohibits cruel and unusual punishment. In the 1970s, the Supreme Court did briefly rule against capital punishment, and the irony is that states turned to lethal injection as a way of continuing with it. This has all proved a fillip for opponents of the death penalty, and I'm now on my way over to the Calvary United Methodist Church in the south of the city to meet Stacey Rector, Executive Director of Tennesseans Against the Death Penalty. She's organised a meeting of local church pastors to talk tactics. Now, what have we got here this morning, then?
Well, we've got a gathering of lots of different folks, but the Methodist Church primarily here in Nashville helped us organize this. They've been very active on this issue of late. They are hosting us, and a good contingent of United Methodists will be here today, but a variety of other people as well.
What exactly are you going to be discussing?
We're going to be showing our film. It's brand new, and so we're trying to get it out to folks to help churches and other groups that have access to lots of people to be able to use it and to educate and to get conversations started.
And this campaign has really gathered steam in recent months with the debate about lethal injection drugs?
Yes, and the setting of the execution dates. Tennessee has now scheduled 10 executions. I think it's getting people's attention, and then on top of that, with the lethal injection and electric chair issues that are now out there, I think it's something that suddenly is right there in people's faces, and they're beginning to think, wait a minute, this could really happen. What do we need to be doing about it?
And what role do you think the church has in this debate?
The church has a huge role to play. This is a very strong state of faith. People go to church every Sunday. This is something that we need for them to be talking about.
But there are different views in the Christian faith
here. Absolutely.
Some Baptists, for
Absolutely.
Example, do support the death penalty.
They do. That's right.
So
that's
how
right.
much of a challenge do you have in terms of convincing what are very strong religious arguments held by many?
One of the things that we're finding is even if a church has a pro-death penalty position theologically, it doesn't mean that there's not common ground to be found on whether or not this system, though they may be able to justify it, can be done justly. And when we have alternatives, which are very harsh alternatives here in Tennessee, life without parole, a life sentence here is a 51-year minimum. So I think that's where we're getting some connection and common ground with even denominations that do have a pro-death penalty position. Ndume Olatushani, who was wrongfully convicted here in Tennessee and spent 20 years on death row, is going to be here also. They're filtering in as we speak, so we're looking forward to see who all ultimately gathers.
We got to get up and do something about it because it's going to be people's voices.
Have a public witness, which we did at the Capitol, and many of y'all were there with us. And
the conversation should start taking place. Mm-hmm. It took place in our church.
This is just a handout that kind of summarizes what you can do. So obviously we've got a lot on the table over here.
We've just left the Methodist Church and driven about 20 minutes outside of Nashville with Ndume to a place he's all too familiar with. Behind tall fences and razor wire is Riverbend Maximum Security Prison, a vast concrete compound home to Tennessee's death row. The state's electric chair's housed here, and this is where executions by lethal injection take place. And Ndume, how does it feel to come back to a place you spent so many years?
It's actually, when I come back here, it's bittersweet. Because I'm always reminded when I come out here, the people that I got good friends that's still sitting on death row, and actually three of them is scheduled in the next 18 months to be executed.
We're just looking over at the prison. So right. Whereabouts was death row? Where would you stay?
Right here in this housing unit. They have a unit two, and that's where they house all the death row inmates. When we stand out here now, you look at, you know, these manicure lines, and but for those fences, it could look like any college campus. But these kind of manicure lines and that stuff kind of belies the truth about the mental and physical and psychological deprivations that go on back there. You know, for me, when I first was came here, it was 23 hours of the day in the cell. I had an opportunity over the years to work myself up where I was spending maybe 3 hours out of the cell a day. But the first 10 years that I was in prison, I chose not to have a TV in my cell because I didn't want to get lost in this little small space. Over the period of time that I was in prison, I read thousands of books, you know, and I just try to spend my time trying to figure out how to get up each day and put my best foot forward.
What's the atmosphere like when one of your friends is heading to the execution chamber just before someone is about to die?
I think that everybody probably experienced it different. But for me, it's somber. You don't want to see somebody that you know that's full of life, that you know in a matter of hours will be no longer existing. I think everybody's just kind of sad and kind of in this moment of realizing that where we are, the people that are sitting there, I mean, if you sit there long enough, eventually you will be that person that you see, you know, walking off to be put to death.
In Dume's story and the sort of arguments I heard in the church are what you might call the traditional case against capital punishment, liberal and focused on humanitarian concerns. These arguments have been successful in the more liberal northern states, and in the last 6 years, six states, from New York to Illinois, have repealed the death penalty. But we're in the South. It's conservative here. And those arguments don't cut it. The Bible Belt's known by some as the Death Belt. Most of the country's executions take place in this region. But why is it that the part of the country which most ardently supports the death penalty is also the most sceptical of government? This apparent contradiction has been bothering the person I'm driving to see now. Mark Hyden has impeccable conservative credentials. He used to work for the National Rifle Association and is a former Republican strategist. He grew up in Cleveland, just outside Chattanooga, in the very south of the state. And I've arranged to meet him outside his old school.
On the playground, of all places, it actually came up about the death penalty. And I remember looking at, I don't even remember what student I was talking with, but I said, of course I support the death penalty. My family's Republicans, and I will be a Republican once I can vote. You know, in the 80s and 90s, and coming from a conservative Christian family, it seemed like a foregone conclusion that we support the death penalty. But that mindset's changing. We are skeptical of government power. Many conservatives don't trust the government to deliver a piece of mail or to run health care. So why on earth would you trust them to administer a program that kills U.S. citizens? It's a different mindset than some of our friends from the left, the liberals, view why they're opposed to it, but we come to the same conclusion for a lot of different reasons.
What are those arguments then?
There's nothing more important than life, and if you execute an innocent person, the government does that, that makes them no better than the offenders that they're trying to execute. So I believe life is always number one. But sometimes people want to believe in the infallibility of government. So then I can move into the physical argument. The death penalty is far more expensive than life without parole. I think a study in North Carolina found that each case is actually $2 million more for a death case as opposed to life without parole case. When you can show someone dollars and cents, it's very compelling, very pragmatic, and I've actually won many conservatives over just by talking about cost. If you want to talk about conservatism, I think you have to give any policy what I call the conservative litmus test. You have to ask if it's constitutional, whether it's pro-life, physically responsible, and whether it's limited government. And the death penalty is inconsistent with at least three of those.
And how much do you think demographics are helping your argument when you look at baby boomers who broadly supported the death penalty? And now polls that show millennials actually oppose the death penalty in greater numbers.
Well, we formed a strategic partnership with Young Americans for Liberty, and I've been to the Young Republican Federation convention recently. So I'm finding there's a lot more support with youth. They get it. They're already opposed to the death penalty, and we're just letting them know that you can be a conservative and oppose the death penalty. It's very conservative to oppose it.
I was waltzing with my darling to the Tennessee.
Will Mark prevail? Public opinion does seem to be moving in his direction. Most polls show support for the death penalty down in the last few decades and opposition up, and not just in the wake of botched executions. In the northern states, opponents seem to have the upper hand. States like California, Delaware, and New Hampshire are reconsidering their death penalty laws. You're listening to At the End of Death Row with Rajini Vaidyanathan on the BBC World Service. I'm here in Tennessee, where support for the death penalty is still very strong. And here, like lots of other parts of the American South, there's a powerful emotional connection to the death penalty. Mark has a real struggle on his hands, and to test his arguments, I'm now driving towards Knoxville in the East to visit one of the state representatives, Ryan Haynes, who voted to bring back the electric chair here in Tennessee.
The reason I supported bringing back the electric chair in Tennessee is I wanted to make sure that my voters understood that I am supportive of the death penalty in heinous crimes. I think there are certain instances where it's appropriate to put somebody to death due to the crime that they committed. The second reason I voted for it is I also know the odds of the Tennessee bringing back the electric chair are truly slim to none. I do think that bill was probably more political than it was anyway, and that's certainly not a piece of legislation that I would have introduced in my name.
Why is it so important to still have the death penalty in today's America?
That's a great question. I think that's the most important point that we hit. And it's very simple. It's that families and victims of crime deserve to have justice. I think those circumstances should only be used in very rare instances. And one of those involved a case that was very close to my heart. I had a friend of mine that I went all the way through high school with and college who was very brutally raped, murdered, and tortured along with her boyfriend. And the acts that took place on those two individuals were so horrible that I think it's very difficult to tell a victim's family that they shouldn't have access to the death penalty in those circumstances.
I just wanted to show you this. Earlier today, we went to meet Republican Mark Hyden. He has produced these reasons on this leaflet as to why the death penalty should be repealed. It's a very conservative argument. If you want to take a look and tell me what you think of that.
Right on the front, the very first one that sticks out, it's a wasteful and expensive government program. There is no doubt it is very expensive to put somebody to death in the United States. They go through so many appeals. They sit on death row. The cost is very expensive. And I will tell you, more likely than not, that's the one issue that's likely to get conservatives riled up.
But can I then move on to the second one?
It says the number two, the unacceptable probability of executing innocent people. I feel very confident in our justice system. I think our justice system works. So that argument really doesn't fly with me.
Another argument is that conservatives believe in small government and minimal government intervention, and this is the ultimate state sanction.
Yeah, they do believe in limited government, but conservatives also believe in prioritizing government. We're not against all government. There are instances where we think government is good. We think we need good roads, good schools, and we also think we need to continue to administer justice when a heinous and horrible crime is committed, such as the one that was committed on my friend. I think people want to make sure that individuals who are victims of such heinous, disgusting crimes that really that are so unspeakable you probably can't even air them on broadcast, that those individuals deserve the death penalty.
The details really are as bad as Ryan says. What happened to his friend was so incomprehensible, so unbelievably cruel and brutal, that not only is it too distressing to discuss on the radio, but when my producer and I were reading the details in the car, we had to stop. Ryan suggested we go and visit one of the families involved, partly because he and others are concerned that the voices of victims and their loved ones are often overlooked in this discussion. So I'm traveling over to the other side of Knoxville to meet Hugh and Mary Newsom.
Our son was the love of our life. He was a baseball player. He was just an all-around person and had a very good, honest heart, loved kids, just loved life, had a lot of friends, and finally found the love of his life when he met Shannon. Unfortunately, that didn't last very long when him and Shannon were murdered, and we miss both of them very much.
They did manage to find the perpetrators of this crime.
Yes.
How important is the death penalty in terms of helping you deal with what happened?
That gives me the justice that I feel Chris needs and Shannon. To me, that's the only real justice. Right now, they get to live. you know, their families can go see him again. I can't go see Chris. I can't talk to Chris or write him a letter.
There are lots of people who say now's the time to repeal the death penalty. There's certainly states in some parts of America which are going that way. What's your feeling about that?
It wouldn't be recordable what I think, but I'll give you another watered down version. There's a lot of people that are parading all over the United States and the world against the death penalty. This is the first time anyone has asked the Newsom family what they think. We lost a very great kid by murder. His girlfriend was murdered. Now, there's a lot of people that voice their opinion, and they've never been affected by crimes like this.
You were given a CD from a local church which had a sermon on all about the death penalty. How important is faith when it comes to your attitudes towards the death penalty?
You can't keep from having mixed feelings about the death penalty and the people who actually are put to death. But it was Dr. Sexton at Temple Baptist Church nearby, and he did this sermon and explained, based on the Bible, where it is justified as punishment in God's Word.
Did that sermon help cement your views on it then?
Yes, it did. It gave me the basis for how that penalty was set up and the justification for it.
And does it matter to you how someone dies on death row? Because that's obviously the debate that's playing out here in Tennessee and across America at the moment.
Well, you know, we're not animals. We're humans, and we all have feelings. If the choices were there, I would want a person put to death with the least suffering. But if that's unavailable, then whatever means the state has at their disposal is acceptable.
Here in the more conservative parts of America, the most likely route for those wanting to abolish the death penalty looks now, as it has for most of the last 50 years, more likely to come through a court judgment than a vote. So I'm heading across into the centre of town, to the campus of the University of Tennessee, to meet Penny White, a law professor.
Those who wanted to politicize the courts convinced the public that this was basically their chance to vote for the death penalty. They literally took out ads that said, if you favor capital punishment, vote against Penny White. It was something I was not familiar with, but in this country, it's something that's happened repeatedly in the states with capital punishment that elect their judges, and particularly in the South, in the Death Belt.
So if someone's not happy that a judge doesn't support the death penalty, there's a mechanism by which they can get rid of them.
In any elected jurisdiction, there's a mechanism to get rid of judges. But I want to be clear, judges do not have any business supporting or not supporting the death penalty. Judges are in the business of upholding the law.
But do some judges feel pressure to think a certain way or to decide a certain way because of public pressure?
Well, I think it's only human nature. If you're doing a good job and you like your job, to want to keep it. Whether some judges individually feel pressured, I know there are pressures. I know people feel pressure. What we hope for is that people won't act on that pressure. But certainly, we'd be blind if we didn't see that that pressure sometimes forces judges to make decisions they wouldn't otherwise make.
Many people think that this issue could end up at the U.S. Supreme Court in Washington, D.C. You've been on the Tennessee Supreme Court. What issues do you think might take us to that stage?
Well, a state court somewhere in the United States may ultimately decide that an execution method is unconstitutional or that the death penalty itself is unconstitutional. I think the better likelihood is that states, one by one, will begin to dismantle their state capital punishment laws rather than thinking that the U.S. Supreme Court
will dismantle all of capital punishment.
In my Tennessee mountain home.
This mix of politics, public opinion, and the law will determine whether this state, Tennessee, and the United States as a whole, is coming to the end of death row. The question isn't new, but what's different this time is that very practical considerations have entered the debate. That, in turn, has forced a fresh conversation about how America executes its most serious offenders, and whether it should at all. In the northern states, the answer to that question is increasingly no. But here, in the south, the answer's still a resounding yes. Can more conservative-friendly arguments in favour of abolition persuade some voters and politicians? Probably. But is that enough to tip the political balance in this state and others like Missouri, Florida, and of course Texas? Probably not. At least not yet. Most people I've spoken to in this state expect that these issues will once again come before the courts. But people have told us something else that might result. A kind of limbo, where the death penalty continues to exist in law, but where practical problems and legal challenges mean fewer and fewer executions are carried out. At the End of Death Row on BBC World Service was presented by me, Rajini Vaidyanathan, and produced by Giles Edwards.
The BBC.